Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast. Three women, one podcast, and a whole load of badass. I'm Harriet Minter, and I'm joined by Emma Sexton and Natalie Campbell. And in this week's show, we're tackling the subject of miscarriage with two incredibly brave women. Plus, we speak to the woman who is going to transform how we all invest our money.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
One, two, three, four!
Now, did you know nearly one in four pregnancies end in miscarriage? And yet it's not something we really ever talk about. On the phone with us now, we have Nikki Armitage, who had a miscarriage at 10 weeks. Nikki, thank you so much for talking to us about this tonight.
Hello, ladies. Hello. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. I think this is such an important topic to talk about. So very happy to be here.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about your experience of miscarriage?
Yes. So in, I think it was March 2017, I was 10 weeks pregnant and I was living in LA at the time. And I was actually on my way to this, it was like a women's group for pregnant women who were becoming mothers for the first time. And on the way there, I found some blood in the toilet. And one of my friends said that she sort of bled a lot throughout her pregnancy. And I was like, okay, maybe it's okay. And, but when I was sort of sitting in this circle of pregnant women, I just had this sort of strong sense that I'd miscarried. And I went to the doctors the next day and he told me in quite a cold, matter-of-fact manner that I'd miscarried and it was twins. And I had three options of getting rid of the fetuses. And so I took an option, which was to take some tablets that actually forced contractions. And it was one of the most painful experiences I've actually had. It was comparable to labour. It was so painful and he didn't sort of explain that.
In hospital when this happened, or did they just give you the pills and tell you to go on your way?
Yeah, that was it. And he said you might want to take these painkillers. And it was the saddest thing, seeing, you know, actually passing the fetal sacs down the toilet. And just the emotional, like, you know, just being told that I had a miscarriage was just the most saddest piece of news I've ever received. And then on top of that, the pain of getting rid of them in that way was quite traumatic, actually.
Did you have any support with you at the time? Were you...
My husband, Tom, he was with me and he was amazing. And he was up with me all night. But, you know, I'm part of, so I run a coaching company called Electric Women, and I have a community of women where we all sort of share openly about real experiences with each other. And so I shared in this group that it's a very private group, and I feel it's a very supportive group. And I had this flood of people come back to me saying, you know, me too, I've had a miscarriage, because I actually didn't know anyone who'd had a miscarriage. Yeah. My family and friends all seemingly had, no problems in that way. And so I felt this incredible amount of almost like shame or failure. And so I had to reach out to this community to say, like, help. And I had such amazing support from that community. But other than that, there was no other place for me that I knew to get any support from.
You said you know that nobody at that point, as far as you were, nobody in your family, none of your friends had had any problems. It all seemingly been very straightforward for everybody else.
Yeah.
Do you now know that? Is that the case? Or is it just that nobody had talked about it?
No one had talked about it. And that's the most frustrating thing, because you feel so alone in such an important experience of loss. And you think you're, you know, like there's so many emotions that you're feeling. It's, you know, the grief of having had life and then death in your body, and the hope of children being taken away in a second. And yeah, I just, no one talked about it. And then as soon as I, you know, opened up, loads of people contacted me saying that they'd had miscarriages too. And some of my close friends then told me that they had miscarriages too. This one woman said to me, "Thank you for sharing and being open," because she'd never told anyone and she felt embarrassed about the whole thing. So,
Nikki, now you've been through that experience, looking back, what do you think needs to be there for women to support them through a miscarriage that currently isn't there or isn't what you experienced?
That's a good question, Emma. Firstly, I think just for more people to be open and talk about it. I know that's not for everyone. Some people may want to keep it to themselves because that's their way of dealing with it, and that's absolutely fine. But I just think more openness about it. And then I think a slightly better bedside manner from the doctors. Like, I wasn't very impressed with how, you know, I was given no information about the experience of what I was about to go through and the emotional kind of support or anything. I had to sort of Google myself, and I found the Miscarriage Association, which, by the way, is amazing. And I was on the phone to them a lot throughout it. So that's there as a resource. But yeah, I think just like, this is what you will go through going through miscarriage. This is the kind of emotions that you might experience, and this is the pain that you're going to experience. And this, you know, and just having support. The Miscarriage Association actually does do that, but I didn't know about it at the time.
Yeah, no one would direct you there. I suppose if it's your first time of experiencing it, you're not even aware of what resources, if that, you know, not even on your radar.
Yeah, exactly.
And after it happened, how did you feel? Is it, you talked there about it being a level of grief.
Yeah. Well, I felt so many different things. I felt like somehow guilt, because maybe I did something. Like, I remember actually going out for a run, like for a sort of a jog one day, and then I think the miscarriage happened a week later, and I thought maybe I'd caused it from running. And so there was guilt, and there was feeling that I sort of, my body had let me down, or I was sort of something about not being an, like, this idea I failed as a woman as well. Like, why couldn't I just go on and naturally produce the baby like seemingly everyone else had done, you know? So yeah, lots and lots of feelings. And then I had another miscarriage, actually a second miscarriage, about 4 months later, and didn't hit me as hard because I'd sort of already been through it. But I was, the second miscarriage was very early. I was like 2 or 3 weeks in, whereas the first one, I was 10 weeks in, and I was really excited about it, you know, and I didn't have time to get as excited for the second one. But I think also thankfully now, by the grace of God or whatever, I have now got a baby. I had my third time, I got pregnant, and then I had my baby, and she's now nearly 4 months old. But going through the pregnancy, I just felt the most incredible amount of fear that that something would go wrong. The impact of my first miscarriage lasted a good 2 years of just really thinking about it a lot, all the time. And then and my husband as well, you know, he had his own, it was just very, very sad. I remember the day we found out, and I asked him to write a little letter with me to our little twins to say goodbye and thank you for coming. And it was really actually makes me cry now a little bit.
Oh, Nikki,
both of us too. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, darling. Is there any advice that you would want other women in that situation to know? Is there anything you'd want to tell them?
It's very common. Miscarriages are very, very common. There's nothing wrong with you. There could be, you'll never really know the reason as to why you miscarried. You may never know, and don't blame yourself. And look to support. My suggestion, if you can, would be to talk about it openly and go to the Miscarriage Association to get some support from them. That's what I would say.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us that story and sharing it with us. It's very powerful. That's Nikki Armitage from Electric Women. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Ellen. We also have on the line Vicky from Croydon, who's had a similar experience. Hello, Vicky.
Hi there. Hi. Very similar, except it wasn't twins. And I kind of semi-know or believe I know why I miscarried, which kind of makes it a little bit tougher in terms of the guilt aspect that your previous caller talked about.
What happened to you?
In 2013, I went shopping, and whilst out shopping, I tripped in a shop. I broke several ribs, broke my arm, had a head injury, wrist injuries, hand injury. I was pretty banged up, basically. It was in a bit of a state. At the time, I knew there was a possibility that I was pregnant. So when the ambulance was called and I was taken to A&E, I told them that I thought there was a very good chance that I was pregnant. And I remember having a conversation with the paramedics on the way to the hospital, and they were saying, let's do a sweepstake on whether or not you're pregnant, because it was all in very good humour. But the one thing I remember whilst I was falling over was, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I might be pregnant. This is awful, this is awful. And I remember laying on the floor after I'd fallen, and my only thought was to the potential pregnancy, not that I'd just broken a load of bones or anything like that. It was oh my God, what if this is it? And, you know, what if I've done something to the potential baby. I just knew I was pregnant. That's the only way I can describe it. I just knew that I was pregnant, and I was concerned by the accident. So I went to the hospital. They treated me as if I was pregnant. But the one thing that they didn't do was treat me like I was pregnant in terms of the advice of the medication that I should take. One of the things you really shouldn't take when you're in the early stages of pregnancy is diclofenac, which is an anti-inflammatory. Okay. In fact, you shouldn't take any sort of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medication whilst you're pregnant. And the doctor advised me to take diclofenac for the pain associated with broken bones, which I did, and subsequently found out I was pregnant. I mean, I was ecstatic when I found out I was pregnant, purely because I really didn't think that I would... it would continue if I'd had this massive accident.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like a big accident because I only fell over, but the injuries were ridiculous.
Yeah,
for what I actually did. I just remember not being able to believe it, that I had actually sustained the pregnancy. Anyway, for the week rolling on after that, I took pregnancy test after pregnancy test, trying to convince myself that I was definitely pregnant. I had hyperemesis as well. I suffer from hyperemesis with all of my pregnancies, and this was no exception. It's basically when you have severe morning sickness. Well, it's not morning sickness, but it's all day. Severe vomiting and nausea. Yeah. This pregnancy was no exception. And I remember on the Monday evening, the miscarriage happened on the Tuesday, and on the Monday evening, I remember having mild cramping, and the nausea had disappeared, and it rang complete alarm bells with me. And I Googled furiously. I think I even called the out-of-hours doctors. I've been trying to get an appointment with my GP to get some reassurance about the accident and the possibility that it could harm the baby, and I couldn't get an appointment with my GP. But I went to bed thinking something's not right. I woke up about 5 o'clock in the morning and everything was fine. I felt sick again. Then I fell back to sleep and then I woke up about 7 in the morning and I was miscarrying.
Oh.
I called the out of hours doctor and said, I'm bleeding and I'm pregnant. Went to the out of hours doctors and there was nobody there to see me. So I had to go down to the A&E department, and by that point I was bleeding quite heavily and cramping, and it was awful. And I was also vomiting. So I spent about an hour waiting in the waiting room to be seen by the doctor. And at that point, my pregnancy test was still positive. So there was some hope that that it was going to be okay. Yeah. But in between being seen by the casualty doctor and being sent to the early pregnancy unit, somewhere in between that time, I must have gone into complete miscarriage, because by the time I got to the early pregnancy unit, my pregnancy tests were negative. And the one thing that really angers me is they told me that in the middle of a corridor. There was no sensitivity
down.
Or empathy at all. The same with when they gave me my blood results over the phone. There was no empathy there either. There wasn't any support. I've never got any support from it. I looked around my local area to see whether there was anything.
Yeah.
The only thing I did do was contact the Miscarriage Association.
Mm. And were they helpful?
They were amazing. And I recommend anybody who's in the position that I was in to talk to them and keep talking to them. You know, if it's 2 years later and you're still struggling, talk to them. I mean, it's 5 years on and I still struggle with it. I'm surprised I got this phone call through this phone call without crying. But it's horrible. It's awful. It doesn't go away. You go through periods where you think it's gone and then it comes back. And it's not like any other loss, because you can't, it's not tangible for anybody else except for you.
Yeah.
You're the only one really that felt it. And, you know, if you've ever been pregnant, you'll know the feeling of pregnancy. And it's just an awful loss. It's just a horrendous loss that isn't recognised enough, really.
And is that what you hope will happen, that there is more recognition and there's more support put in place for women that have gone through this?
Well, one of the things I found really distasteful with my local hospital was that when I was having the miscarriage, I had to wait for 2 hours to have the blood test done. They said they were going to get one of the obstetricians to come and do it because the nurse couldn't find a vein. So they sent me to go and wait outside in the waiting room of the early pregnancy unit with all the other pregnant women.
Oh, wow.
And it's little things like that are so insensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And they then refused to get me a wheelchair to take me up to the phlebotomy unit because they couldn't do it there. And they said that at first they were saying, no, you need to walk. But I'd already almost collapsed in the corridor on the way there. And it was just, the way the hospital dealt with me was absolutely diabolical. I'm not going to beat around the bush. The only light out of all of this was the Miscarriage Association. They were amazing. I still call them now on the anniversary of the miscarriage, because every year it comes around and it affects me. And they're always so incredibly kind and helpful and make me feel like I'm not going completely crazy.
Mm.
But yeah, other than that, I've really not had any support, not even from my own GP, really. I had a second one. I had a thing called a chemical pregnancy.
Yeah.
But like Nikki, the previous caller said, it didn't affect me in quite the same way.
Yeah.
It happened. I accepted it for what it was and I moved on. But the first one, I'm riddled with guilt over, because there's lots of things I feel I could have done that could have changed it.
Yeah. Poor thing.
It's horrible. I just want to hug any woman that's ever been through it. Because I think, just like I said, it's a horrible kind of loss because nobody else can see it.
Thank you so much for sharing your story with us tonight.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it. And we want to give you a hug.
Thank you.
And, you know, I really feel that actually just by sharing that, there's almost certainly a woman out there who is feeling like she is not alone right now. And it's not just her.
So
thank you so much, Vicky. I really so appreciate you coming in and talking to us tonight. Thank you.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
The Fempire Strikes Back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
Now, did you know there is a massive investment gender gap? So apparently, the average 65-year-old woman retires on £35,800. Now, how much more do you think men retire on? How many times more?
I'm going to say 4 or 5 times more.
Pretty spot on, my darling. 5 times more men retire with. It's 150,000, isn't it, roughly? Look at that maths. Yes. Didn't get a GCSE in maths for nothing. Here to tell us why that is, we've got Davinia Tomlinson, founder of the new app Raincheck, in the studio. Welcome, Davinia. Nice to see you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So why have we got this gender investment gap? What is that all about?
Well, I think there are a couple of issues. I think the gender pay gap is something that we're all familiar with. You can hardly turn on the TV these days without reading about the gender pay gap. And of course, it stands to reason that if you have less disposable income to save and invest, then obviously that will have an impact on the gender investing gap as exists today. I think another issue is the fact that women, despite being very diligent savers, you know, the behaviour already exists in terms of our ability to put money away for a rainy day or for later life. When we do save, we tend to put our money into cash. Now, in a low interest rate environment that like we've had in the UK and globally for a number of years, the impact of your savings in a cash vehicle is likely to be less than in stocks and shares over a long term period of time. I think the other thing to say, particularly on the fact of the gender pay gap, is the fact that a significant chunk, and I don't know the numbers, but a significant chunk of that gender pay gap is attributed to motherhood. So, you know, lots of women who return to the workforce after having kids tend to do so part-time, or they might choose to have an extended career break, for example. And of course, that again would have a knock-on effect on your disposable income and therefore your propensity to invest for later life.
And how is Raincheck going to change this for us?
Well, Raincheck, you know, my vision for Raincheck is to promote financial inclusion. And by that, I mean thinking about how to get more women to invest through a very simple 3-pillar business model. And that provides financial education on the basis that women, when we do invest, we are very competent in investing. So there is data that shows that we outperform men when we do by up to 1%. But what we do need to do is to improve some of the, engender some confidence around investing and to really give women a toolkit, so the knowledge and information to do so confidently. So financial education will be a big part of the offering. Financial advice. So I always liken it to, you know, any situation in which you'd like to be left in a better place at the end than you started. So transforming your body, for example, you'd get a personal trainer. Finances, I think, is the one area that, you know, people still have a mental block to paying for financial advice on the basis that it seems counterintuitive to pay money to make money. But actually seeking out the advice of a professional is absolutely the way to go. So financial advice delivered via video conference to promote that accessibility and inclusion, which is a big part of the vision, is another part of the offering. And then the third part of it is events. So delivering holistic wellness events. And by that, I mean not just focused on mindfulness and meditation, but also thinking about financial health as a conduit to, you know, everything else that we want to do in life. So they'll be hosted nationally, wherever our rainmakers exist, and will basically be an opportunity to for people to bring along a plus one. So we don't have that awkward networking situation where you enter into a room and you don't know anybody. But actually, it's just really nice surroundings, and that you will feel inspired and uplifted at the end of those events and motivated to do something different in your life.
What age are you targeting? Because I hear you in terms of the investment. I've heard about like compounding, which is basically if I'd invested a lot more money in my 20s, I'd be reaping the rewards right now, and I'm not. And there's always that sort of challenge between, you know, wanting to invest and put some money aside, but actually wanting to live your life to the full when there's a bit of like, well, I'm only young. If I put away some money now, who knows if I'm even going to make it to retirement?
Yeah.
What age would you, in a perfect world, would you see women start investing their money?
That's a really good question. And you're absolutely right. There is that whole YOLO thing about not deferring happiness.
Avocados or pension.
And I think, you know, certainly when it comes to something like pension savings, I think the early, so from your first job. So I think, you know, for people that go to university, their first job out of university, it's a 21 or 22. If there is a workplace pension, I would start saving into that straight away. But the other thing that I would say is that there's no, you know, it's never too late to start as well. I think, you know, particularly when we hear these statistics around, you know, the average 65-year-old woman retiring with £35,000. And if you're, you know, somebody that might be later in life than a 22-year-old, you might think, oh, well, it's too late for me. I better not, you know, there's no point in me doing anything at all. I think absolutely there's always an opportunity to transform your fortunes. And again, that's where, you know, soliciting the advice of a professional can really help.
And what do you think as well? We talked about this on the show. I feel like women are bombarded with things to waste their money on. If I look at how much money is sitting in my wardrobe in terms of stuff, but I feel like men, all the things that men can buy kind of like increase in value, like the watches they buy or the wire, like there's minimal things that they can spend their money on. And I feel like women get bombarded with just stuff to buy.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought this up because honestly, it's something that I'm so passionate about. So I have a marketing background, so I'm always really interested in, you know, different marketing campaigns for different products and services. And it's so apparent that the communications that are pushed out to men and women differ so significantly in the language that's used. So of course, let's focus specifically on finance, for example. When you look at magazines that are targeting women, they tend to focus on budgeting or how to make the most of your shopping bill and how to save, you know, money, you know, shop, move from Ocado to Aldi, for example, and then you can buy that handbag or buy those pair of shoes. Whereas for men, it's thinking about how to outperform the stock market and invest your money into Google or Apple, for example. I think the language around investing needs to change, and that needs to start from an industry-wide level in terms of making sure that it's neutral.
Okay, well, we're going to keep talking to Vinny about money and how to make the most of it here on Badass Women's Hour XL.
The Fempire strikes back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
And we are also joined by Davinia Tomlinson, founder of the new money app for women, Raincheck. Emma asked a very good question about, do we just bombard women with messages to buy junk, essentially? We've just had Black Friday. Davinia, if you are being kind of got at from every single angle, every time you turn on your computer, another 20 ads are popping up for things you once vaguely glanced at, how do we start to resist some of this temptation? Is this, and start thinking about better things we should do with our money?
I think one of the things that we can do, I mean, we're such big consumers of social media, for example. I think women are the biggest consumers of Instagram. One of the things that I personally started to do at the start of this year was to really forensically analyse my following list. So rather than looking at all of these fashion influencers that are basically, you know, pushing out ASOS ads or Fashion Nova and all of these different brands, instead to follow people that are focused on positive mindset, who are focused on making really positive money moves, for example. And there are a lot of money influencers that I think we're able to follow that can help us to engender some of those behavioural changes that we need.
And there's something that you did that you probably didn't know you did. You posted on Twitter that 87% of Black Friday deals are cheaper at other times of the year.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that true?
And as soon as I saw that, I was like, I am buying absolutely nothing.
Oh, brilliant.
And it literally stopped me from going online and just having a little nose at what might be cheaper. Because I was like, but it probably is cheaper at another point in the year, because they probably put the price up and then reduced it and then told me that it's now a deal, and it actually wasn't a deal. And I've started reading the small print on TV ads, you know, when it says bank holiday sale and it says it was originally this price but it was this price before and then it was this price and now we made it this price, and you realize that actually it was cheaper before they put the price up and then put the price down for sale. So thank you very much for doing that. that helped me massively. Do you think that we need to start much younger when talking about money and what we spend our money on and saving? Is it almost too late once you get to your 30s?
No, never too late.
Okay.
Never too late. But you're absolutely right. I do think that there is something to be said for starting as early as you possibly can. So I know I made the point about, you know, obviously investing into a pension and, you know, from your as early as you possibly can in your first job, for example, out of university, if you go to university. But I think even before that, there's an opportunity for children in school. It needs to be part of the curriculum, thinking about, and of course, there's a place for all of the other subjects, but there has to be something about real life skills and budgeting, money management, all of those things absolutely need to be
part
of the curriculum.
That's what really annoys me about school. All the things I learnt in maths, all the algebra that I've never ever used. Could I work out what was the best mortgage? No, it took my dad to do the calculations. And even getting a mortgage, you look at the calculations and you think, oh, that's a good deal. My dad's like, well, that's not a good deal, because when you do that and pay that over X amount, you're going to be paying more than you are on that deal that look more expensive. And
exactly.
I was like, I wouldn't have even known. I would have just gone, oh, that's a cheap one. And, you know, without luckily enough having my dad to look at that. And it really annoys me.
Even things like, you know, when you're offered credit cards, for example, and they have the 0%. So lots of us think, oh, we'll take the 0% because we're going to pay off that debt within that period of time. And then you don't, and it kind of flips over into a really astronomical rate. And if you're not keeping track of it, then suddenly you find yourself in a hole that you can never dig yourself out of. Because compounding, of course, works in the same way, but in reverse. So if you're investing, compounding is awesome because it means, you know, the rate of return is exponential over a period
of
time.
Just explain compounding for some of our listeners.
So compounding is basically where interest is earned on the interest as well. So let's say, for example, if you've invested on a simple interest basis, if you've invested £10,000 at a rate of 5%, for example, then that means you've earned...
I'll make you do maths live. Sorry, that wasn't a good move.
I know. £500. So £500 each year. So let's say 3 years, 5% interest, then that's the same. You get the same amount in each year. On a compound basis, you'll get interest on top of the interest each year.
Right.
So of course that means that the return is generated at a much faster rate over a period of time.
And that's longer term. So anything that you've been investing that's like over say 10 years, that's when the compounding really starts to pay off, is it?
Exactly.
Or, yeah, okay.
And I think with all investing, it pays to hold the investment over a long-term period of time.
It's really interesting because I actually looked at compounding in terms of the service charges on my flats. They put the service charge up by 10% last year. And I worked out that if they kept doing that, basically, at some point, I was going to end up paying them £500,000 a year. And I emailed them and I was like, this is ridiculous. You know, even if I didn't live to this age and I'd left the flat to the people, to my, I don't know, dog, you know, you're never going to be able to sell it on this basis. And when I did that, what was really astonishing to me was that I'd never thought about that in terms of my own saving. So I analysed it and worked it out in intense detail in the amount I was spending. But when I looked at it, I was like, oh, actually, if I just did, it's not a huge amount of money. If I did that amount of money on this return for 30 years, I'm retiring
You're
very
winning.
Nicely.
Exactly.
Yeah. Why do you think women are more hesitant to invest than men? Why are we less inclined to gamble our money, I guess?
I think it's you know, there's a lot of noise in the media at the moment that says that women are risk averse, which I don't necessarily believe from speaking to, you know, friends and family and even women that I spoke to as part of the research when I was developing Raincheck. I think it's just that we are much more diligent in terms of our research process. So we're not, you know, there's not a flight of women rushing into Bitcoin, for example, yeah. because it seems like a gamble. I think we're just more careful in terms of where we put our money because there are real things that we might be saving and investing for.
Are there things you should be looking for when you're thinking about investing?
I think, you know, it's really important that you might want to look at the manager, for example, the track record of the investment manager that you might be putting your money with. I also think it's important that you think about what your particular goals are. So, for example, you might have short-term goals, which might be to save a deposit for a house. Therefore, it would stand to reason that you wouldn't put your money into something that would lock you down for a really long period of time. I think, you know, it might be that, you know, dependent on your age, that will have an impact on the asset class that you might choose. And by asset class, I mean the difference between equities and bonds. So let's say you've got a long time horizon within which to invest, for example, you might be more willing to take a punt on the stock market and therefore put your money into equities on the basis that you can recoup any losses over a period of time. Whereas if you are closer to retirement age, then you're less inclined to put your money into something that'd be a bit riskier, and therefore you might want to put your money in bonds and cash, for example, that can deliver a regular and relatively stable rate of return over a period of time.
But you need to know what those things mean to be able to make the decision. One of the things that I've started to do is set up pots of money, and so money that I save and the money that I'm fine and happy to spend, as opposed to just having a pot that is spend. And as soon as I did that, it changed everything because I know what I'm saving. And then I've got a pot that I'm saving for a holiday. And then if I want to buy something indulgent, there's a pot. But it just removes the anxiety, and actually really taking ownership of money just changes everything because it never feels like there's a lack. And it's never about wanting more. It's just working with what I've got.
I did that for a while though, but I was the world's worst pot juggler. I was like, well, I'm just going to borrow from this pot into that pot for a little bit and then I'll put it back in.
But it's the behaviours, right, of actually just owning your relationship with your money. That is the first part of any of this journey, and not feel it. If you get over the thing of not feeling like you have enough, then you'll be willing to invest it.
Exactly.
Because you're removing the risk. And I think that's a big part.
Amazing how you just spend what you have. Like earlier this year, you know, I started off the year quite tight for money because my business didn't do very well last year. And I've got a financial advisor and she was like, right, I want you to put extra amount in here to be paying off your mortgage. I was like, I can't, you know, and I just decided that I was going to have that direct debit go out. And I was like, right, if I need the money, it's in a ISA, I can get it back. And actually I haven't missed that money at all, but in my head I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do without that cash this year. And now that's, you know, those little and often amounts have really added up over the year and I haven't really missed it. So you just have to bite the bullet and get those direct debits going.
If there is one thing you would like everyone listening to do after this, what would be the first step towards taking a more responsible attitude to your money?
I think, oh, if there's one thing. Yeah. Can I have two?
You can have two, go on.
Okay, so the first thing
compounding.
I think the first thing is before you take any decision around saving and investing, to look at your debt and to see whether, you know, if you've got debt that's in something that's charging you a really high interest rate, clear that down immediately or as quickly as you possibly can. I think the second thing is if you've got all of your money saved in cash and you don't need it within the next 2 to 3 years, for example, I would consider moving it into stocks and shares. So there are a number of different stocks and shares ISAs available, and I would consider researching those.
Brilliant. And you can, if you want to help with that research, go and download the Raincheck app. Thank you so much, Davinia Tomlinson, founder of Raincheck. This has been the Badass Women's Hour podcast with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton. If you want to hear more from us, you can come follow us on social media at Badass Women's Hour, HR, or leave us a review and tell us how much you love us. We really need to feel the love. 5 stars should do it.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.